joining us in a studio again. Jake, a very, very good morning and welcome back.
Good morning, Howard, and good morning, Zanati.
Morning.
And morning, listeners.
So we were talking a couple of weeks ago about creating workplace cultures and how important this is. And in fact, we just had an interesting conversation with Ronit Gerber. She's very involved in this type of things in the UK as well, where she works with Selfridges trying to, and other companies trying to develop a good workplace culture. This morning we want to focus on the relationship between feeling connected with growth in the workplace. What does that mean?
So 2 weeks ago we were discussing the fact that culture really makes people feel in a particular way, and we said it makes people feel valued, connected, that they're making a contribution, that they're growing. And really what is quite important is looking at two of those things. Let's look at two of those things and let's just focus on them. How do we make people feel connected and how do we make people feel that they're growing? With a particular emphasis on those. And so one of those aspects, one of the ways of trying to achieve that is to have a bit of an open door policy. And I want to actually just read some excerpts from an Elon Musk memo that he sent out in about 2015 to employees at Tesla. Because I think it actually gets to the heart of one aspect, one way of creating that connectivity. And what Elon actually speaks about is he says the subject for the communication was communication within Tesla.
Right.
There are two schools of thought about how information should flow within companies. By far the most common way is a chain of command, which means that you always flow communication through your manager. The problem with this approach is that while it serves to enhance the power of the manager, it fails to serve the company.
Interesting that.
Instead of a problem getting solved quickly, where a person in one department talks to another person in another department and makes the right thing happen, people are forced to talk to their manager, who talks to their manager, who talks to the manager of the other department, who talks to someone else on the team, and then the info has to flow back along that same convoluted path. And this is incredibly dumb, says Elon Musk. Any manager who allows this to happen, let alone encourages it, will soon find themselves working at another company. No kidding. That's what he said.
Wow. And then, so what he's really saying is, I mean, we understand what he's saying, but the alternative could be anarchy.
So that's, he addresses that. And he says basically you would think that really what we're trying to achieve is maybe lots of random chit chat through the organization. He says that's not it. We're trying to actually achieve effective, seamless communication. And then he goes on to say further in the letter, in the memo, one final point is that managers should work hard to ensure they are not creating silos within the company that create an us versus them mentality or impede communication in any way. This, unfortunately, is a natural tendency and needs to be actively fought. And he ends off by saying, we're all in the same boat. Always view yourself as working for the good of the company and never for your department. And so what he's trying to say is it's not about communication. In terms of decision-making within an organization, structure is important because certain people have certain responsibilities.
Absolutely, and expertise.
But you can't use that same structure of responsibility and authority. You can't use that to constrain and constrict communication. Communication needs to be free and open. And I think what he does there, which is, I think for me was really inspiring, is he achieves two things. He achieves the fact that now people are starting to feel that they can connect with anybody.
Right.
There's no artificial barriers keeping them apart. And I think that's really important.
So in terms of hierarchy.
In terms of hierarchy. If I can speak to, you know, dive in and speak to the MD, or I can speak to any other divisional head, or speak to somebody who's, let's say, in another department on the shop floor, and I think something's bothering them. If you have those doors that are open all the time, you can actually create that sense of connectedness. But he also mentions in that same thing about the whole concept of working against creation of silos. And I was speaking to Brian Isaacson, and we were talking about corporate politics. He gave me a brilliant definition of corporate politics. He says, corporate politics is when a person is working in their own best interests to the detriment of the company's best interest. And what Elon Musk shot down with one memo is basically saying
we're all in the same boat.
We're all in the same boat. We have to work for the company's best interest. And it's not about trying to pad your own esteem or to look after your turf, because as soon as you do that, you're working against the company. So I thought that was a very insightful.
And it's a very good test. It's a very good measure. Often, when I'm helping people through a problem, in a mentorship or a coaching environment, people find it sometimes very difficult to say to somebody, you know, if they're in negotiations, no, that's not okay, or that's, you know, I want to push back on something. And what I'd like to say to them is separate yourself from your company and say, I'm now representing the company. Even if that company is me, even if I'm negotiating for myself, separate myself from it. Am I doing the responsible thing for that entity? Forget the person that's actually having this communication. If you can separate yourself from it and say, well, what is the responsible thing to do for the company or for, you know, whatever it is that I'm representing? Maybe it's my family. Maybe I'm representing my family, you know, when I sit here and have a discussion with you. What is the responsible thing? Then you can sometimes get to a very different place because you've used that construct.
Sure. I mean, you often land up getting to the place that you're aiming to get to.
Exactly.
And if
you're
aiming for the wrong place, you're inevitably not going to land up in the right place by chance.
Right.
It needs to be aimed for.
So how do you make people feel safe in an organization?
I think one of the ways of doing it, I mean, so maybe I can talk to a slightly different point, but it speaks to trying to create safety.
Right.
So I'm sure you all heard about gossiping in the workplace.
Never. We do it on air. It's much more fun.
and I think if you actually look at
the whole water cooler.
And if you think of gossiping as speaking behind somebody else's back when they're not there, all right, speaking about that person when they're not there, really, you need to understand that gossip is almost the social glue that builds community. So it's not intrinsically negative. And I think there was a study done in 1992, if I'm not wrong, 1993, by Robin Dunbar and others, Marriott and Duncan, really looking at analyzing gossip within a workplace environment. And they found that when they analyzed it, the vast majority of gossip is actually neutral.
It's not malicious in any way.
It's just neutral.
Stuff.
Jill told me last night that she's taking a car in for a service. She's going to be a bit later this morning.
It's
perfectly neutral.
Yeah.
And only 15% of gossip is negative.
But that's stuff we're interested in.
Exactly. but that's really backbiting. And if somebody, let's say, is speaking to you and they're speaking maliciously about somebody else, the trust in an organization breaks down and the connection in the organization breaks down, because while it might be a thrill for them to be in possession
and to share that knowledge
knowledge and to have that brief dopamine rush, look at what I'm contributing.
Right.
Basically, that the person who's listening to it is saying, actually, when I turn my back, what are they going to be saying about me?
And even if they're not thinking that consciously, they are getting that message.
Yes.
That this is an environment that allows this.
So one way of doing it is to try and actually create an awareness in an organization about the negative consequences of backbiting.
It is a fascinating conversation. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Do you work in an organization where gossip or backbiting is a thing, or do you work in an environment that has created an entity or a culture that is exactly the opposite? How has it been dealt with? I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 061-895-1019. I am chatting to Jake Shepherd. He is a founder and a director at Synthesis, and we're talking about, and we have been for the last few weeks, speaking about workplace culture. How important is it to have a positive and a powerful workplace culture? And now we're drilling down and looking a little bit deeper into how to create that culture. This morning we are focusing on the aspects of making people feel secure in order to allow growth. Time is 8:43. I'm Howard Feldman. We'll be back straight after this. Time is 8:46. A very good morning again. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 High FM. Stan says, he who gossips to you will gossip about you. What do you think, Sanati?
So, yeah, so basically I think it's no surprise that most of the gossip is neutral, because a lot of the time when you're talking about your fellow colleagues that are on the same level, it's not really bad things, as you mentioned, Jake. But I think the gossip that's usually negative is when you and your colleagues basically gossip about your boss. That's where the negative. But like at the same time, I even feel like that gossip connects you guys.
Well, it does to some extent, and that's perhaps the danger.
Yeah.
Is, do you want to be connected? Do you want to create a culture that is connected through that type of unity against the boss?
Mm.
You know, that's so old school. That's so 70s.
It happens.
Of course, it does. That's the reality.
Yeah.
Jack, your response to that?
So I think what's quite useful is to try and actually understand, how do we classify backbiting?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a great illustrative story told about Socrates. He's walking down a street in Athens, supposedly, mm-hmm. and an acquaintance runs up to him and says, Socrates, I heard something really interesting and juicy about one of your students. And Socrates says, just wait a minute before you actually tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see if it passes the triple filter test. And
see, he's no fun to have at
parties. Yeah,
not at all. This is why he never got invited out. Jeez.
So Socrates says to the acquaintance, so the first of the triple filter tests is what you're about to tell me good? Let's start with true. Is what you're telling me true?
Mm-hmm.
And his acquaintance said, well, I actually don't really know. I heard it from somebody else. I don't know if it's true or not. He says, fine, you can still tell me if it passes one of the other triple filter tests. Is it good? Is what you heard about that person something that's really, you know, uplifts the person and, you know, identifies good character traits? And the guy said, definitely not.
I wouldn't be telling you
otherwise. He said, fine, you might still be able to tell me if it passes the last of the triple filter test. He says, is it useful? And he said, well, of course not. It's not particularly useful to anybody. So then Socrates turned to him and said, well, why on earth are you going about trying to tell me this? It's not. There's no truth to it.
Mm.
It's not good, and it's not useful. And I think
so it's true, good, and useful.
And
you have to pass all the three.
Basically, has to pass any one of them.
If it's true, then how?
No, that's not good enough. No. Jake, you can't give her permission. Because it's true, so we can say it. No, it's got to be all.
Not necessarily, because basically if you see something firsthand and you're worried about it, maybe you have to sometimes talk about it. Mm-hmm. You can't always say, well, I'm going to cover for everybody.
Right. No, absolutely right, because it is sometimes very important.
Yes, is it good? No, it's not good, because the person was stealing money from the till. But it's true, I saw it. So to say I want to keep quiet because it's not good, that doesn't really make sense. It can pass any of those single filters. And then really, I suppose, in terms of trying to inculcate a culture where backbiting is frowned upon, is gather your staff together and say to them, well, how many of you have experienced the negative, you know, consequences of backbiting? And basically then define what backbiting is. Is it true, good, useful? Use that triple filter test. And then say to them, how many of you want to work in a workplace where the environment is one where there's no backbiting? And then get everyone to commit to actually create an environment like that. And just a limited, maybe it's a month, maybe your contract is for a month, we're not going to have any backbiting.
Interesting. I recall so clearly an incident some years ago where I was home one night and all of a sudden I started getting emails with screenshots of IMs. They were instant messages that people used to communicate that way more than WhatsApp. And what this was the IM conversation between various members of our accounts department at the time. And we didn't know what was going on, but it was extracts that you could see them talking about people in the organization. So there was mass panic. They shut the server down because we realized they'd sent it to the entire, whoever it was sent it to the entire company. We did an investigation. What we found was there was this one guy in accounts and he felt quite isolated and victimized by the other people in the team, in the four or five other people in the team. So what he had done was he managed, and I don't know how he did it exactly, was was to get screenshots of all of these conversations, and he sent it out to the entire company. The problem, of course, was that they didn't just speak about him, they spoke about everybody. And everybody had now received these emails. And of course, we had to do a tremendous amount of damage control. But what was so, what was, it goes exactly, Jake, to your point, is the damage that it did, especially for these people. Okay, for him as well, because he was fired the next day. But the damage that it did for the entire company was so significant, because everybody felt hurt. And as much as we said to people, do yourself a favor, we don't know, you know, if your name is even on those conversations, just delete the emails. And of course, most people didn't, because they wanted to know. And it did real damage. It was tangible.
I can believe that. Sure. And then if, just coming back to those values of making people feel connected and actually create and making people feel that they're growing. Mm. So what Synthesis has done, we've instituted a program of employee advocates and mentors. And what we're trying to do there is we're trying to address the connectedness aspects as well as the growth
advocates
aspects.
And mentors being two separate roles.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk through them. Mm-hmm. So obviously, let's say you're at a company and you're working within a particular area. Maybe it's the finance area. You're within a particular functional team, or if you're out at a client working on a project, you fall under, let's say, a team leader or mission leader, and really their focus is to make sure that the project is successful and the client is happy. It's not really focused on you as a person, as an employee in terms of your growth, but they're really focused on trying to make sure the project's successful and the client happy.
Right.
So you actually need to also create a web of relationships within the company that really, and that we can use these relationships to work on people's professional development. So if you think of an employee advocate as somebody who's advocating for your professional development and actually working through what are those hard skills you need to work on, and what opportunities you need to be given to practice those skills. So maybe you've gone on a course and you've learned something that it's going to uplift you technically, but now you need to move on to another project or another initiative that's going to give you the ability to practice that. And your advocate's there to champion you within the organization to say why you should be moving.
So every person has one of these advocates.
Every person needs
And
to
they're about advocate. Career.
Career growth, professional career growth.
Right.
And then you can't forget about personal growth. So we have mentors, and mentors are really about trying to uplift you from a personal growth point of view. And again, this is quite difficult because we're not a whole bunch of psychologists and clinical psychologists that we know how to deal with problems. So it's not about trying to deal with problems. But it's really trying to deal with three virtues. And Patrick Lencioni, in his book, The Ideal Team Player, mentions three virtues that are core to people being great team players. And he talks about humble, hungry, and smart, specifically people smart, not necessarily IQ smart. And he said all good team players share those three virtues. So really the mentor's job is then to help people become a bit more sensitive to their ego needs and to develop a bit of humility, you know, maybe acknowledge the contribution of others, become more hungry, like do more, achieve
take on more,
take
put
on
your
more,
hand up.
Take on more responsibility, and how to go about doing that. And it's not supposed just in a work environment, but also in a home environment.
Sure.
Take on more responsibilities, you know, to make sure the marriage actually works really well and the kids are happy and that you're sorting them out. And then lastly, people smarts. Those skills that require us to be able to step up to those difficult conversations and holding people accountable. And those skills are really important. So what we're trying to do there is really achieve both professional growth, personal growth, but also it's not just having a person being stuck in a silo within one functional area, but actually creating those webs of connections across the organization, because your advocates and your mentors aren't in your reporting line.
Right.
They stand aside, they're outside of it, and they're really worrying about you as a person. Mm. So you've got now a lot of avenues to communicate anything that you're concerned about, or just to get feedback on maybe how you could grow. Yeah. And that's a really an impressive program.
So I asked Ronita Gerber, who I spoke to a little bit earlier, if every person, if she believes every person, she refers to them as coaches. I think you're using the word mentor really more than, as an interchangeable. And in South Africa, we often do that. We call mentors what people overseas refer to as coaches. But I asked her if every person, if she believes that every person should have a mentor or a coach. And she said, yes, absolutely. What's interesting to me is, there must be people, and certainly maybe older, the generation above, who don't really want to focus internally on their own stuff and growth. How do you manage that?
So I would say, I wouldn't suggest trying to, if you're talking about stuff, as in the negative stuff or the unconscious.
Well, very often that is what's holding back our own achievement.
I'm cautioning against turning our workforce into clinical psychologists,
exactly.
Which they're not
right.
Trained to do. And I think that could be a mistake, in my opinion. Unless you're hiring an entire set of
So I guess what's important, therefore, is to help your mentors identify when something is outside of their realm, and
encourage you to go to a clinical psychologist to deal with this, because we think that this is something that needs to be explored and understood.
Right.
But this other area, which is about growing humble, hungry, smart, I'm really happy to help, and I want to step in.
And then
I think creates quite a good rule of thumb as to what you should get into and what you should stay away from, and it's because of it, not being able to do it.
Absolutely. I'd love your thoughts on that. 34519. Unfortunately, though, we are not going to be able to address them on air. We are running out of time. It is 8:57. Jake Shepherd, director and founder of Synthesis. Thank you, as always, for your wisdom. These sessions are absolutely fascinating. What do you think, Sonati?
I love that. Humble, hungry, smart.
Is that your new mantra?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you heard it, yeah, on Chai FM.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.